The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with John Gilroy, managing partner of the Oakmont Group, which is entirely responsible for its content.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy, managing partner of the Oakmont Group. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts about some of the IT trends and challenges facing agencies and industry. Now, your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Got a kind of unusual show today. I usually sit down and talk with one person about a product or a service or a federal agency about a concept. Today we have two people in the room here. We're going to talk about innovation, I think, is the focus today. Innovation mostly for the federal government. And all my listeners are scratching their heads. They're getting their budget reduced. They're kind of wondering where the heck their CIO is. And they're trying to do more with less. They're getting pushed to the cloud. And this is a very, very difficult world because they're inundated with data sets and trying to make sense of them. And there's always buzzwords floating out. There's a buzzword. Machine learning is a buzzword. Artificial intelligence is a buzzword. So I thought we'd bring in two people to talk about some of these concepts and how these concepts can help my listeners, federal IT professionals. In the studio today, we have Megan Metzger. She is the CEO and founder of a company called Decode. And we also have Becky Fair, who is the CEO of a company called Thresher. Good morning, ladies. How are you?
Good morning. Fantastic.
Yes, good morning. Well, glad to be here.
Decode's kind of a, what the heck's Decode all about? It's D-C-O-D. I thought it was D-C-O'd when I first found them. But Megan, tell us about your organization and what you do in town, please.
Yeah, absolutely. So Decode really was founded for some of the things that you just mentioned, which there's a lot of innovation and a lot of buzzwords and a lot of technology that we think could really impact the way that the government operates. So especially in an environment with reduced budgets, how can you bring in better, more emerging technologies, you know, from the private sector, looking at the tech hubs like Silicon Valley and Austin and Boston and even here in DC to really drive some change. So what we do is we run an accelerator program several times a year where we select 6 to 10 companies at a time to go through a program really focused on how to do all things government. So how do you effectively market and sell to the government? What problems are you solving inside the space? And then how do you connect with those individuals so that both sides can have a lot of success? So we run our programs around 3 themes. And you mentioned artificial intelligence and machine learning. We just did that program earlier this year, and Becky was in our program, and absolutely amazing technology, kind of driving some really, really, solving some really cool challenges in the government space around the machine learning and all that data that you mentioned.
So you lead an accelerator here in Washington, D.C. with focus on FinTech, market assessment, developer tools, and big data and AI. And we're a prize student here.
We class favorite, don't tell the others.
Class favorite. Oh, no, class favorite. She turns on her homework in time. I'm in a classroom all the time, too, so I know those class favorites. So class favorite Becky sitting in front of the class with an apple. She brought an apple today for me.
I did.
Tell us about your company and your background, please.
So Thresher focuses on the machine learning part of artificial intelligence, and we focus specifically on training data. So we create transparent training data sets fast for machine learning. So people often ask us if they don't know about machine learning, what the heck's training data? To train a machine, to create an artificial intelligence, you have to teach it just like you teach a toddler. And so if you think about or you've heard about Google's cat detector, can you detect a cat or not? To train it, you give it 1,000 pictures of cats and 1,000 pictures of not cats. The machine looks at those pictures, learns, just like you tell a toddler, cat, not cat, and eventually understands what or can spit back a new picture that it makes its own conclusion about. It's easy, or not easy, but for companies like Google that have lots of data, they can get that done. But for those sorts of applications in the government where there's not lots and lots of data, or the decision, cat, not cat, is really complicated, like nuclear waste versus nuclear weapons, or SUNY versus Shia rhetoric, that's hard. That's what we help with. We help with those class of problems.
That's kind of fascinating. So machine learning really is writing software that can learn. So it's closer to data mining than the other stuff out there. It's like getting information from large amounts of other types of information.
Yeah, well, and teaching the software what you want it to understand or what you want it to predict, for example. So you'll see machine learning in a variety of applications. You'll see it already in simple things in some ways, like Netflix, right? Where Netflix is making recommendations on the movies you might want to watch.
Other people have watched, yeah.
Based on, yeah, exactly. Yeah. What other people have done, what you've done. It's taking all of that training data that we all have labeled conveniently for Netflix and put it into these machine learning models that it's going to go ahead and try to predict.
So, Becky, what I did is I went to your LinkedIn profile. And I saw an MBA from Dartmouth, which is pretty impressive. And I saw Russian, which is impressive, too. I think that's a hard language to learn. But I've been told by certain teachers in the room that I should ask you the story about your Chinese and where the Chinese fits in and data mining with this this angle. Tell us about that.
Yeah, it's an interesting origin story. So the underlying tech that we use was created by two of my co-founders, Dr. Gary King and Dr. Patrick Lam. Gary King's the, among other things, the director of Harvard's Institute for Quantitative Social Science. And he and his researchers were trying to reverse engineer Chinese government censorship of Chinese social media.
That sounds like an easy problem, doesn't it?
Oh, it's totally simple. Except the Chinese netizens were using code words to hide from the Chinese government.
So this is like slang and code words in Chinese.
Exactly right, yeah. And so if we go back to, if you're going to create models to understand things, you need good data to start with. And if people are using code words and you don't know what those code words are, how do you know you have the right data to start with? And so Gary and his researchers at the time, Dr. Molly Roberts and Dr. Jen Pan, who now are out in California at Stanford and UCSD, developed this computer-assisted approach to surfacing this kind of rare language, these code words. So then using those code words could then collect the right data, get the good training data so that they could then do the modeling that they were trying to do and understand the Chinese government.
I'll tell you what, when I read about your background, I thought of The Sopranos, you know? I'm sitting with Megan in a bar and I go, hey, Megan, you got the thing? Hey, I got the thing. What do you? These are code words, huh? I mean, what does it mean?
That's
Did you bring the thing? Yeah, it's in the car. I mean, right. These are code words. Everyone uses them.
And you don't even need Sopranos, really. I've got teenagers and
code words.
They've got code words. The example I've used before is Jort. You know what a jort is?
No, I don't.
It is a jean short.
Jean shorts, I knew that.
Megan knew this one. She's heard me tell this story before. But if you're the Abercrombie brand manager and you're trying to figure out how do you talk authentically to teenagers, that's a word that you should know.
It's so difficult. It seems so obvious. I was working with a company that did a lot of standards assessment and quality assessment. And so I wanted to use hashtag standards for a post. And then I said, I might as well. So standards are what teenagers use. They say, oh, I have standards. I'm not going out with Bill. And hashtag standards. So I didn't use hashtag standards because it would mean something different. Now it's maybe a code word in different generations. And of course, how else can you understand the real meaning of a language in the streets unless you understand the slang?
Yeah. And not only, I mean, the standard example is a great one where it's a slang application if you're trying to find that. But also if you're then trying to understand conversations, in your context, standard means one thing. In someone else's context, it means another. And so how do you if you're trying to, again, understand that language, use that text data to build models, how do you make sure you've got the right stuff in there? And that's what we're focused on.
Last night I was listening to a podcast called Lexicon Valley with John McWhorter from Columbia. And he talked about, Indo-European languages and Proto-Ukrainian. And he said, Chinese, wow, it's so hard. It's tonal. It's like singing a language. So not only do you have textural information in front of you, but it's also tonal. So this just adds a little bit of complexity to the whole problem, doesn't it?
It does. And there's also another layer, which is it's also, it's like pictures. And so one of the ways that the code words are done isn't even, one is by sound, but another way is drawing pictures or changing how the picture looks. And so there'll be examples where you'll, the one that is well known in China circles is the word for eye field. It doesn't mean anything in Chinese or English, but if you add a line to each character, it becomes the word for freedom. So it's not even sort of a code word, it's just a code picture, essentially, making it even more difficult. Mm.
So Megan, what you do is you find good companies like this, and you bring them into a cohort, and you coach them up, and you set them out there, is that right?
Yeah, that's right. And I mean, in Becky's case, Becky spent years inside the government, so very well versed on how this market works. But the thing that really attracted us to the problem that Becky's solving is what Thresher is doing is just so critical to government missions, because when you're looking at data sets, the outcome is mission critical. I mean, it can be a life or death scenario, not to sound dramatic, but it really could. So when you expand the data sets leveraging Thresher or those types of tools, the answer changes in what the predictions that you're trying to come. So it's not just a matter of expanding that data set to include more. It actually can impact what the outcome of the data science these agencies are trying to run, will do. So, you know, part of working with Becky was how can we take this amazing work that they're doing inside a lot of agencies today and really help expand that into other parts of, you know, this, whether it's civilian or Homeland Security and DOD, because I think it's a really critical function.
I think it's a really important skill set, especially for this community that's listening to this broadcast, talking about like reverse censorship or finding out what they're saying between the lines. That's a very subtle, difficult skill. Let's take a break and come back. We'll talk more about artificial intelligence. I want to talk about machine learning and maybe more about DC code and what you folks do and learn more about thresher and the whole concept of what a thresher is. My wife's from a farm, so I understand what a thresher is all about. And so you have a whole lot of stuff and you produce something that's coherent. So maybe that's what the thresher is all about. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, Megan Metzger, founder and CEO of Decode, and Becky Fair, CEO of Thresher. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, we have Megan Metzger, founder and CEO of a company called Decode, D-C-O-D-E, and we have Becky Fair. She's the CEO of a company called Thresher. These are easy for me to say, but may have a hard time finding your website. So, Megan, if they want to go to your website, where should they go, please?
Yeah. So our website is dcode.co, mm-hmm. and we actually just changed our name. So we were Decode 42. We dropped the 42, so if you go to the old website, it'll route right on over. But
and an old guy like me, I'm going to type in C-O-M, so you want to type C-O. So dcode.co, and all kinds of good information. Find out about the groups they have going on and blog posts and all kinds of information. So, Becky, if people want to go to your website, where would they go, please?
We're Thresher, thresher.io. So, yeah, note the our end, our .io is a little bit unusual, but
we
you can.
The .io and the .co.
That's right, lots of O's.
They're trendy in the tech world.
They are trendy in the tech world. Yeah, and you can certainly take a look at more of some of the case studies that we've done for various things and request a demo if it looks like it's something that we can help you out with.
Well, I actually turned on my internet machine this morning and went to thresher.io, and I saw this great line. Get the text you want from any API or database. Kind of a mission statement or summary of what you do, isn't it?
Yeah, to some degree. I mean, we are text agnostic. So people bring all sorts of text to us, anything from Twitter length types of thing in any language, Arabic, Russian, Chinese, English, to 20 to 30 page technical documents in any of those languages as well. And so we're really focused on working specifically with our clients' custom data, and are flexible on what they need.
And so a wide range of languages. This gets to stretch a little different. You get into something, you know, more difficult to understand like Arabic. When I think of Arabic, I think of 14 dialects. I mean, there's mm-hmm. is that the dialect language? I mean, and some languages get so confusing that way. I mean, it's hard to just say Arabic, isn't it? I mean, it's just really, you must have a range of professionals you can draw from. Is that right?
I do, actually. On our team combined, we speak all of those languages. So that's one of the great things about my team, really diverse in that sense. And one of the reasons that we can handle all of these languages is that our underlying tech really turns the language into math. And so we are not built around any single grammatical structure. But once you turn the language into math, and we use math to sort of sort through the patterns and then convert it back to what we as humans understand and read in English or Arabic or Chinese. And you bring up the dialects in Arabic, and you're right, that's a really hard problem, particularly for some of the government use cases. We're actually really good at that. And so one of our senior data scientists used Thresher in her dissertation to distinguish between different Arabic dialects in Egypt and North Africa. It's a pretty niche use case, but for those people where that matters, we're really powerful.
Yeah, in Spanish, there's different regional variations, but in Arabic, from what I understand, it's really almost it's really wider. It's not just vocabulary differences; there's structural differences too. So it's tough.
Yeah. Now, Arabic's not my expertise; it's Russian. But yes, for our Arabic expert, yeah, she would say that. Not only that, but if we're dealing with social media or language or written language. Online, it gets even more complicated. Things like Arabizi, if you've heard of that, which is really this kind of mix between English and Arabic in some cases, or people often, some of the dialects are meant only to be spoken. And so when they try to convert it into a tweet form, it becomes sort of anyone's best guess as to what it might be.
Tamil is a good example.
Great example.
Sort of spoken.
I didn't know that. I learned something today.
Well, Megan, we're learning something from you now. So you meet someone who's real bright and hardworking like Becky. She's got a great idea. She's got this great company. She knocks on your door and she goes, well, maybe you could help me out with forming my company. And so do you approach her? Does she approach you? Or how do they get connected? How do you get connected up to Decode?
You know, I actually don't remember how we got connected.
I don't either.
You know, we have an amazing network of people that recommend technology that's just fantastic. And, you know, we took a look at what Becky was doing and really saw the need, like we said earlier. So, but part of our mission, you know, we're not focused on helping Becky become a company. We're working with later stage technologies that are established. We're focused on the very complex government market. So if anyone, you know, the federal folks will know this well, but if you try to Google, how do I work with the federal government, or even use some of the resources out there, it's nearly impossible to figure out exactly what you need to do. So understanding the inner workings of a procurement and how the government's buying, to what compliance I need to meet, you know, the technology stack, all of that can be very complicated. And what we've noticed is that typically when a new technology tries to come to the market, you can end up hiring 50 different consultants and they all solve one piece of that puzzle. So our mission is to bring all of those really complex pieces into a single spot rather than you have to figure out all the directions you need to go and who you need to contact to do that.
So Becky, last summer I was in Ohio and I was doing a triathlon and I was staying with a friend who's in a farm. And in the middle of dinner on his deck, he goes, okay, time to bring in the hay. And so his friend came over the tractor and we started throwing these hay bales in the back of a cart and put it in the barn. This is just how farmers think. And he doesn't have a thresher because his farm isn't big enough. But I imagine if he had a thresher, he'd have acres and acres and acres of grain and have to bring it in. Now, collecting the grain, you get all kinds of products you may not want to keep. And so I look at your product and I think this is what the thresher's all about. You get this unmanageable data set, all this chaff, and you're trying to separate the good stuff from the bad stuff. And, you know, it's difficult.
Yeah, it's funny you bring that up because that image works really well for what we do. And there's sort of an internal battle in our team about what our logo should be. Our logo is actually a shark.
Shark?
It's the Thresher shark.
Oh, I thought the different...
Yeah, no, but
maybe
it works.
You should redo your logo now.
Yeah, well, so we've talked about that. We may still, it's just that the shark gets so much more play than people get more excited about the shark stickers than they do a piece of wheat sticker or combine sticker of some sort. But the reason we pick the shark is that the Thresher shark has a really long tail. And one of the ways you can apply our technology is to the issue of long tail search.
I have a 2-hour lecture on keyword search, and there's a tool I use called Long Tail Pro.
You
can type a name in there or a word and get all kinds of different terms. So
exactly.
Some more long tail and short tail. So I just want to go back to Megan and say, so you find a company like Becky's and you say, well, geez, come into this. And 6 months later, you set her free. Exactly what happens with Decode?
Sure. So the program runs for 3 months and there's 3 key parts to the program itself. So the first part is just that education layer on all things government. If you were to put it in terms of, you know, college series, we're going to be a 200 or higher level. So really getting into the weeds on everything from how do I price effectively? How do I do marketing? You know, how do I protect my IP? And then, of course, there's always nuanced things that pop up, like Becky finds around DCAA compliance and, you know, the stuff you don't realize you need to know before you enter into the market. The second part's focused on working with each of the companies separately on what their go-to-market strategy should be. So one of the first things we talk about is what problem are you actually solving? And what agencies will have this problem? So we can start working on kind of a really targeted go-to-market strategy around all those different areas. So whether that's a pricing strategy or a new marketing strategy, we'll update materials, we'll update the website, things like that. The last piece is probably one of my favorites. It's focused on exposure and access, and exposure for both sides. So the companies, you know, in the middle of the program, or actually 2/3 of the way through, we have what we call a Power Week. And we'll have anywhere from 20 to 30 agencies come in and sit with the companies one-on-one. And then we have tons of mentors come in that same week. And it's just a networking extravaganza, I guess you could call it. I'm tired after that week. I don't know how the companies feel because they're the ones actually talking.
Extravaganza.
Yeah. So I think in Becky's case, I think they met with about 200 people in a single week with one-on-one meetings.
So even an extrovert would find that taxing, I think.
Yeah. Yes, but it's great for the agencies too. So all the agencies that get involved are looking for emerging tech, and they perceive there to be a barrier in the reverse because they're looking for the technology that understands government problems and also understands some markets, so they're not as risky for agencies to work with. But also in this new world of artificial intelligence and blockchain, how do they even know what's out there and what's available? So it's also seeing the types of solutions that are coming forward so they are more informed as they move forward. So then we end in a demo day, and then after that, you know, it's off to the races, and we try to, you know, in our alumni work closely and stay in touch with Becky and all the companies as they move forward to see where we can be helpful and continue to, whether that's review a proposal or make some connections and things like that.
So, Beck, you're based in the Washington, D.C. area, or distributed people all through the country? How's your company structured?
Yeah, we are a distributed team. So I am based in D.C., but I've got people in Boston and L.A. as well that allows us to recruit some talent that we might not otherwise be able to recruit. It also gives us some flexibility in terms of customers we can support and people's own sort of work-life balance.
So, Becky Fair, I'm going to be fair to you, and I'm going to introduce the question, then we'll take a break. And so the question is, what's the difference between artificial intelligence and machine learning? And I'll give you a commercial break to come up with a good answer for that, and we'll see if your teacher approves. See what Megan thinks of it. But I think people are confused about this. And if we have someone like you who's actually gotten her work boots and gotten in the mud and the trenches and figured it out, you'll be able to come up with an answer that'll help our listeners figure out the difference, because everyone tosses around. Every big company has AI now. Every big company's got ML. So who knows what it is? We'll find out from you. We'll get a definition after this break. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, Megan Metzger, founder and CEO of Decode. And we also have Becky Fair, who's the CEO of Thresher. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. In the studio, Megan Metzger, founder and CEO of Decode. And we have Becky Fair, who is the CEO of Thresher, Thresher.io, if I'm not mistaken. Well, because I'm very, very sophisticated in intelligence, I did some search this morning looking to come up with topics for this interview. So I went to Google Trends. How sophisticated is that? And I typed in artificial intelligence. And if you look at 2004 to today, you see a dip. You start high and a dip and it goes back up to today, okay? Then I erased that and I typed in machine learning, and it's almost like a straight curve up. I looked at myself and said, well, what's going on here? And in other words, 15, 16 years ago, there was an interest in artificial intelligence, and then it's gone down, it's gone back up again. I mean, so maybe you can explain this, Becky, and tell me the difference between AI and ML and why this dip.
Well, I'm not sure I can explain Google's algorithms.
Come on, you can't. Well, off with her head.
And I think, as I mentioned at the break, no matter what my answer is, I think people will disagree with me, partly because it's a hard thing to define.
It is, so, I know.
And I think people have been talking about artificial intelligence well prior to 15 years, frankly.
And natural language processing from 30 years ago.
Decades sorts of things. I think it also gets complicated because Hollywood has helped us imagine all these things that AI could be.
It's a robot takeover.
That's right. I mean, HAL, was one of sort of the original artificial intelligence that we're going to take over. So at least when I think about artificial intelligence, I think about exactly that. I take it at face value. It's an artificial intelligence. Generally, when I talk about artificial intelligence, I'm thinking of a human artificial intelligence, because you could have artificial intelligence for animals or fish, I suppose, or other sorts of things. There's a story I tell about my dog. He's a little black and white terrier thing, and I was walking him one day, and there's a little four-year-old boy. We walk by, and the boy stops. He's playing basketball with his dad, and he says, "Dad, there's a cow dog." And he's right. My dog has the markings of a cow. But for those grown-ups around, of course, we know right away it's a dog. And so that four-year-old intelligence had a problem classifying, was that a dog or a cow? Now, does that mean he's not intelligent? So the other problem with artificial intelligence is, what are we talking about? That four-year-old's brain, my brain, or a surgeon's brain?
The brain of Albert Einstein.
There we go. Yeah. All different AIs. Machine learning, then, is the process of getting software or teaching software to do something or understand something, which could be part of an AI, but an AI doesn't necessarily have to be learning. You could just program it in straight ahead. So, and then it gets, more complicated, because then there's all types of machine learning. deep learning. Other
so, Megan, so artificial intelligence is trying to make a machine mimic a human mind. Is that what it's trying to do here?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's fair. But yesterday I actually was in a discussion with folks about, you know, should it actually just be called augmented intelligence, which is how do we leverage, I think the goal, at least in my mind, around artificial intelligence solutions is how can we augment or really enhance what the human brain is capable of doing? Because there are going to be things that machines at the end of the day will be better at. Take the massive amounts of data that the government has, for example. You know, there might be patterns and signals and anomalies in there that the human brain might not even recognize because they're very complex. And a machine is able to do that. But at the end of the day, do we want that machine making an intelligent decision? Probably not at this point. We'll see where society goes with this. And this is probably a whole radio show in itself. But it's augmenting what the human brain is capable of doing so that we can then make better decisions based on the data that the machine can surface for us. That's how I generally am looking at it right now. Machine learning, I think, is a critical part of training, you know, these machines to actually surface better things, or like in Becky's case, surface better data sets so that we can have better outcomes when we are leveraging the augmented or artificial intelligence side of it. But it's a complex world, and everyone has a very different answer, for sure.
And yeah. This whole idea of mimicking a human being, and I keep thinking of there's so many different flavors. Now, if the person who's writing a code, and I'll use some terms that are used in my world, many times people who develop software technology have a certain mindset. And I know software developers. I know one guy who brought a cot into his desk so he could sleep, and he'd code for 20 hours and sleep and code for 20 more hours till he collapsed. And if these are the people that are writing the code, if this is how they define human intelligence, and this is what's evolving right now is the whole concept of, so what level do we want? Do we want, someone on the spectrum? Do you want someone who is a normal human being? And what's normal? You know, is Becky normal? I don't know. She seems normal to me, but I don't know. I mean, this is defining human, huh? This is hard.
It's really hard and really, questions that, raise all sorts of moral issues about ourselves, things that we haven't worked out, and very frankly, from society to society and the cultural norms that run in those societies. I would say for your listeners, at least in the government, thinking and maybe worrying less about exactly how it's defined and thinking more about what problems do they have to solve without defining it by artificial intelligence or machine learning. Articulating those problems and then talking to people about what tech can best do that. Sometimes AI, artificial intelligence can help. Sometimes augmented intelligence can help. Sometimes neither are the right answer, frankly. And so just because it's the hot topic or because machine learning now is rising in the Google rankings doesn't mean it's the answer to your problem. But if you can't articulate what your problem is, you're going to have even less likelihood of finding the right tech to solve it.
Yeah, and that's probably Megan's job here with Decode. She gets exposed to 20 or 30 companies, and she figures there's a lot of candidates there that may have answers for the federal government, and you have to filter through and say, no, this is a square peg in a square hole. Another hard problem.
Yeah, the hardest part for a lot of technologists and people that have this amazing tech is they're so proud of it, and their tool can accomplish great things. But when you come into the government, Becky's spot on. I mean, this is part of the soapbox that I usually go down, which is government needs to understand and know what their problem is. Just on the same side of that, the technology companies that are coming in need to understand what that problem is, because you're selling a solution and an answer to a problem. You're not selling a technology itself. So, if the government knows what solution or problem they're solving, they shouldn't be so worried about defining exactly what the solution should look like. Is it artificial intelligence? Maybe, to Becky's point. We see this even with some of the latest buzzwords. Should you use a blockchain? It sounds great. You're moving the ball forward on emerging tech, but maybe it's not necessarily the best solution. But what problem are you trying to solve? If you start there, then I think you'll have a much better outcome when you're looking at the technology you should implement. And then if it is artificial intelligence, I think back to kind of the conversation a little bit earlier where, whose brain are we mimicking? I think that's why a tool similar to Becky's, things like that, so you can surface better, more comprehensive data sets is critical. So we don't end up with racist chatbots, for example, because people have biases built into their brain. So even when they're building out training data, their biases might end up in that data so that the machine is learning based on, the biases of people.
So, Becky, you talked about your dog earlier. I don't know if you sent your dog to dog or bean school or if you went to the school to learn how to train your dog, but you're training a dog and you're talking about training data.
Yep.
And so what you're doing is trying to organize it or put it in sets that make it more comprehensible.
Yeah, comprehensible for a computer, right? Because if I want the computer to do something for me, if I want the computer to, determine whether or not a patient is going to be readmitted to a hospital, then I need to tell it what markers I would be looking for, right? Because the doctor knows these things or has some ideas about them. And so as we go to create that, as people go to create that training data, we can help that, right? We're training the machine so it can see patterns, the kind of patterns that the doctors and nurses might be looking for.
Is your dog cow moo?
We thought about teaching him that after that incident, but it hasn't worked so far.
So my brother-in-law did an MBA at Dartmouth and got hired by an insurance company. And he didn't get no respect because he wasn't a numbers guy. And so he went out and he took the 7 actuary tests. And he passed. Finally, he walked in a room and they said, hey, now we give him respect because of actuarial tables and it's all numeric. Now, his undergraduate major was history. So he's articulate and he can write, but now he can do. So it seems like all these answers are focusing into the actuarial table type answers. And so artificial intelligence, oh, that's just one small narrow subset of something that if it deviates from this, then do that. It just seems limited more than expansive, doesn't it? I mean, it all boils down to a number and that's what Becky's going to. No, it can't be just that.
No, I mean, I think that's one of the, I mean, that's a challenge in software development in general, right? It's software stuff's hard in part because the world is complex. And it isn't just, math itself is complex. And then if you layer over it all of the things that are also complex. I mean, I think it was interesting, I don't know if you saw, but the economist that won the Nobel Peace Prize was a behavioral economist, right? And so their insights are really about this combination of how models can tell you part of the story, but then humans and how they behave and the understanding of psychology tells you the other part. And it's the combination of those two things that become powerful and give real insights. And so, I'm a history major too, so I appreciate that component. But I'm also a big fan of math. And so I'm really interested in the intersection of those two things. And we can solve some things with straight numbers that are programmable, and other things are going to be harder to do, to Megan's point, and may require really the combination to solve.
Go to the Thresher website. I wrote down these notes: machine learning, natural language processing, data science, social science.
Yes,
we hit on it. Social science. Elasticsearch,
right.
And AWS. It's an interesting progression there. If you try to graph it, look at this. Where's social science? Oh, it's pretty important. It's really in there. And then it leads to the tools, which is AWS and Elasticsearch. Let's take a break. Come back. We'll talk more about Thresher. We'll talk about Decode and artificial intelligence and maybe where this is heading in the next 5 to 10 years. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy. Here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM in the studio, Megan Metzger, founder and CEO of Decode, and we have Becky Fair, CEO of Thresher. Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM in the studio with Megan Metzger, founder and CEO of Decode, and we have Becky Fair, who is the CEO of a company called Thresher. And we've been talking about innovation, artificial intelligence, machine language. We've been talking about data sets and understanding it. And I think it boils down to your website, Megan. Technology has the power to change the way government runs. That's you.
Yeah, that's what we do. So I think anyone in government, whether you work, you're an actual civil servant, and especially if you're working on interesting programs and technology or, the larger ecosystem in the federal government space, like the prime contractors and folks like that, everyone has a critical role, I think, in moving this ball forward. So that's the heart of our mission.
And if people are listening to this and want to get more information about you have special demo days a few times a year, don't you?
We do. So for every program we run, we conclude in a demo day, and they're usually free for government. And we have one coming up October 31st. So it's not a trick. It should be a pretty good treat. And it's around digital transformation and DevOps. So anyone in that field, definitely come check it out. It's going to be downtown, and it starts about 8:30 in the morning. So if you head on over to our website, there's some information and the link to quickly sign up and register for the event.
And that would be decode.co, decode.co. Is that right?
Yep. That's great.
So, Becky, you survived a demo day. Did you have to see a psychiatrist afterwards? Or is that a local bartender got a tip that day? How was your demo day?
I might have visited the local bartender afterwards. But no, they run a great show, and it was well planned, and we talked to some really interesting people. And it's always interesting to talk not only about our company, but to hear the other companies demoing. And I had a really good time.
And we do have one other coming up. I went off and forgot the date, but it's on our website, and it's around fintech and blockchain, which I know is a hot topic.
Oh,
and that
boy.
Will be in December.
Yeah. In fact, I was talking to a couple of people about that, a guy named Epstein, who knows a little bit about blockchain. I don't know if you know him or not, Jeremy Epstein. Mm-hmm. He's well-known in that area. Well, ladies, I'm going to take you back years and years before both of you were born. I'm going to take you back to 1980. And in 1980, in the Washington, D.C. area, the high-tech corridor was Roslyn. And Roslyn was the home of companies like Videc and Wang, and they had word processors. They sold for $20,000 for a word processor. And some of those word processors use something called natural language processing. Here it is again 40 years later. Guess what? Natural language processing. So, Megan, I'm going to turn to you right now. Okay, let's go back to the future 10, 15 years from now. Are they still going to be throwing out this term natural language processing? Or where is this all going to be heading here down the road? You've seen a lot.
Oh, that's a really interesting question. I mean, I think things like artificial intelligence will be a mainstay. The buzzword will probably go away.
It'll change. It'll still be there.
It's kind of like cloud computing. At one point, that was, the wave of the future, and now it's just kind of standard status quo. So I do think that we're heading towards that. It'll be interesting to see how we get there with cultural norms and policies and things that regulate it. But, other than that, I'm not really sure. I do know that I'm pretty sure my son, who's 5, will not already need a driver's license or won't understand what a remote control is. But I don't think that words like natural language processing will really go anywhere because we're still going to have that problem.
Yeah.
Road. I don't know if you agree with me or not, Becky.
Becky, you're on the spot here. Exactly. What's going to happen in 10 years in your world?
I'm not sure I'm going to predict that far ahead. We're a bootstrap company, so we're always focused on sort of the immediate, helping our customers in the near term. I mean, when it comes to language, I spent a lot of time abroad, and even if we manage to get our arms around all of the challenges in the English language, I am highly skeptical that within the next decade, we will manage to get our arms around all of the languages spoken in the more than 200 countries around the world and sort that all out. Humans are highly creative. It's one of the things we're really good at, one of our superpowers, and it is therefore likely we will continue to create and continue to create problems that computers just can't do on their own.
Megan's website talks about technology has the power to change the way government runs. We know that. But if you are a startup, if you're a small company, and you knock on an agency's door, let's say you go out to HHS, knock on the door and say, hey, my name's Becky. I've got this great idea. It's a square peg in a square hole, and slam the door. Then you go to transportation, same thing. Then you go down the road to justice, same thing. So how does a startup like yours knock on the door of HHS and go, hey, Dr. Collins, we can help you save money on X, Y, and Z with our technology? There's a challenge for you, isn't it?
Oh, it's a big challenge. It's one of the reasons I got involved with Megan in the first place, because even though I've spent some time in the federal government, I was not an expert in acquisitions by any means. I maybe had someone acquire something for me, but I certainly didn't run the gauntlet myself. And so when I met Megan and her team, I was really interested in how they could help me navigate that path and act as a force multiplier for my business development. And I think one of the things she's helped us do and is focus. So not doing a scattershot at all of the U.S. government, but really picking and identifying those places that have the kind of problems that we're trying to solve, and building relationships, working to understand what their needs are, and then trying to address those directly.
And when I think of natural language processing, I stumble on HHS and NIH and healthcare terminology and language. And healthcare is full of specialized terms. And they take this word outcomes that was taken from the medical, and now they throw it around everywhere. It's just there are a lot of very specialized terms in that area that may benefit from this knowledge. And I don't know about in foreign languages or not, but the language, some of the medical people I've talked to, it sounds like a foreign language.
Well, that's a great example where, healthcare is a great spot for us because you're right, there's a lot of specialized language. Making the decisions about training data requires an expert. So not anyone can decide whether this is an article or a thing about a cardiac myopathy or a cardiac arrhythmia. I'm not even sure I know what those words mean exactly, but you need experts to sort out that training data if you're going to start doing modeling. And so as the healthcare industry works to become more and more efficient, those kinds of getting your arms around those kinds of problems are going to be really important. And hopefully the spaces will see real gains, both in terms of time saved and dollars saved, and hopefully lives as well.
So your website talks about hidden code and information that's left out in the text. Between the lines, that's like reading poetry and understanding subtleties in here. Really, I mean, this no wonder you need a guy from Harvard's 15 years experience, huh?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of great companies working in this text analytics space in the broader challenge of text analytics. And so there's a lot of different ways to tackle that and different problems to solve. We really focus on those places where there's small overall sets of data, not the Wikipedia-sized data of the world or the content review sorts of things, but this harder class of problems where, you know, maybe it's just some reports in Somali or, about Nigerian politics, these sorts of things.
So what your skill set can allow one of my listeners to do is have a deeper understanding of a specific area, and then someone can take action or not take action. I mean, lives can be dependent on conversations that take place in Somalia. I mean, this is bad things happen.
Sometimes people say, well, that means you only work in national security. And
no,
that's true,
no.
Right? We have those national security has that class of problems. But we're really looking at if you're dealing with text data that doesn't match the sort of standard stuff we see out in the world on a regular basis. All right, healthcare is a great example where it's a very specialized language. And even within healthcare, there's certain focuses where it's specialized. The finance space, where you can't just let the data out in the world because it contains personal information or it contains very sensitive information. That's another one where some of these standard text models that can be used in the Google kinds of cases don't work or can't be applied. We can help in those kinds of cases.
Now, Megan, I'm listening to Becky, and I'm thinking of applications for marketing. I'm thinking of applications for keywords and buying keywords on Google and what should I bid, what should I not bid? I mean, I see applications beyond the government for her skill set.
Oh, absolutely. And I know that, the Thresher team is pushing into commercial as well because there are just tremendous amount of use cases. So whether it's the finance or healthcare sector, insurance, but they all have relevance and similarities to some of the problems that the government's tackling, across all divisions. So DOD, civilian, HHS, you mentioned Homeland Security. There's probably some strong applications to, all the challenges that Becky mentioned are just rampant if you're doing data science.
If we take one commercial world satellites, they're coming through with high throughput satellites right now. And so what's happening is the amount of geospatial information that's coming down from a satellite is not the fire hose. It is a data lake. It's like how do you have a model to understand these data sets? And there's problems that before, I think this week they launched a satellite that had four or five different satellites. There's constellations out there. The amount of information that's coming in now, I mean, even my kids couldn't conceive of it. And 4 or 5 years ago, your kids are going to see stuff that never existed. So you have to have a structured approach, a model in order to understand that data, don't you?
Yeah, and I think my co-founder has this thing where it's the big data is not about the data. It goes back to my comment about defining the problem. So often the reaction is, we need all of it. We need all of Twitter or all of whatever. And, 99% or maybe 99.99% of Twitter probably isn't relevant to whatever question you're trying to answer. And so we really work with our clients to help them define up front what problem, what question are you trying to answer? And then let's focus on getting that data that is signal rich so that we spend our time and our computational power on the signal rich stuff that's really going to make a difference to the kind of models you're building.
Great. We're running out of time here, unfortunately. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. My guests today were Megan Metzger, founder and CEO of Decode, and Becky Fair, CEO of Thresher.
You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy, managing partner at the Oakmont Group. Download this show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Search Federal Tech Talk.